Ready to proceed?
Yes, sir.
You reserving four?
Yes, please.
Fire away.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, John Lomas on behalf of the appellant Zuru, Inc. This appeal is of a preliminary injunction against First, Zuru's Max, Buildmore branded toy action figures.
There are a lot of issues and we don't have much time. Can I just get right to what concerns me?
Sure.
I mean, there's two things, but the main thing is the tape mm-hmm. and the injunction on that. Mm-hmm. I'm a little confused about the basis for the irreparable harm finding here, because Lego doesn't sell any tape, does
Correct.
It? Can you explain to me? I mean, and I found the district court's opinion on this a little opaque. I mean, obviously, I'm going to ask this to your friend, but can you just address the irreparable harm prong on the tape part?
On the tape, Your Honor is correct. Lego does not have, or at least we're not aware of, a competing product that's not in the record. And then second, the irreparable harm argument that Lego put forward was based on this idea that there was potential quality issues with certain Zuru products, and that...
Did they put that argument forward with regards to the tape?
No, and that's what I was going to get to, is that that argument was only with respect, or the discussion of that, the testimony concerning that argument was only with respect to the action figures, not with respect to the tape, nor the bricks, the design that are, the three bricks that are subject to the injunction as well. So I think in both the Make-A-Tape and the bricks, that there was no discussion of quality issues with either.
Well, the bricks there was talk about lost profits.
Well, there might have been talk about lost profits, but not the quality issues that would have
occurred. I understand, but lost profits in some cases have been deemed to be a sufficient grounds to find irreparable harm.
Right, and I don't think there was any evidence, though, submitted that they had any lost profits. It was purely speculative. In fact, the Lego witness testified that they had done no analysis of any lost sales from those brick sets. And we were talking about, for the brick sets, we're talking about only three bricks of several dozen different types that come in boxes of 200, 700 bricks. So for the idea that there could be some harm connected, to, or you know, some significant lost profits to connected to value to three design bricks out of all those different hundreds of bricks in the set, is pretty far afield in our view. I'd like to get back to the action figures on the copyright and infringement analysis for both, because there, the district court's analysis.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Just because. I want to follow up with what, before you get down to that, I know you want to get that because it's the heart of the case, but
right.
the bond,
mm-hmm.
how much did you ask for the bond? Did you set a number? When
I believe it was tied to, it was at least the $1.5 million of expected cost, but I believe there was also testimony concerning the $10 million of additional lost profit damages.
What's our 8 to 10? $1 million in lost sales, mm-hmm. possible 8 to 10 lost. It was a sworn affidavit by a financial officer of some sort, but not with any charts, not with any backup, not with any statistics, not with any documents. Sworn statement.
Mm-hmm.
And your adversary's argument is, well, you know, that's without the sworn, without some details, the court could ignore the sworn statement.
Well, I mean, it turns out that, I mean, not in the record before that court at this time, but I mean, this thing has come to fruition with lost sales. And I don't think that the issue there
was. Well, it's not as if there wasn't a considerable period of time in which to produce a piece of paper that would back up the sworn affidavit.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things you argue is that on page 73 of the blue brief, that if you prevail at trial, you can't collect more than the $25,000. Lego is posted. That's not the law, is it? I mean, admittedly, the bond is supposed to cover the potential, but that doesn't limit you.
It doesn't limit us in that's the only thing that we would be guaranteed for.
I understand, but your statement was a straight up, if you prevail, you can't collect more than the nominal $25,000.
Off the bond.
That's not true.
Well, no, we'd have to have some sort of additional claim for damages or for cost, which would not be...
That sure. We would,
right. Okay. So with respect to the copyright and trademark issue analysis on the figures, of course, any proper infringement analysis needs to start with the identification of the protected legal right. And here, in this case, the district court did not do that, did not identify, delineate the scope of either the copyright, the protected scope of the copyrights or the trademark at issue, and did not compare the actual protected scope of the copyright or trademark to the Zuru figures. With respect to the copyright, the district court's analysis ultimately
on page 72 of the red brief, Lego argues that Zuru never argued below that the district court, quote, improperly relied, close quote, on embodiments of the Lego Friends figures. Where in the record did Zuru make that argument before the district court?
It's in pages 560 to 563 of the appendix. Okay. And the broader point is, though, in addition to just the reliance on additional figures, the broader point is the district court failed to limit the comparison to the proper protected scope of the copyright. Essentially, the district court's decision finds that, or relies on a finding, that Zuru has effectively monopoly rights over a 1.5-inch small humanoid toy figure. And that's not the law. That the humanoid toy figure is an idea. And ideas, of course, are not protected by copyright. They're explicitly excluded from copyright protection under the statute. And the Second Circuit previously addressed the very limited scope of copyright protection that's available to human-like figures in its Mattel v. Azraq Hamway opinion, which should be a dispositive here.
You cited 560 to 563?
Yes.
Where did you argue the district court improperly relied on embodiments of the Lego Friends figures? I see the comparative pictures and so on.
We argued that we're here in 560 to 561, we're depicting the figures that Lego's expert relied on, the Santa figure, and we describe that these, and right at the bottom of 561, we talk about the plaintiff inaccurately stating that these figures are copyrighted and protected by the copyrights. They're not the ones that were the deposits that for the copyrighted works. And so, and this is one example of where we.
You said they should do it. You said the court should.
We said the court should.
Should conduct a visual comparison of the works.
Of the works, so, yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
but I guess I'm looking at improperly relied on embodiments.
Well, the fundamental point is that the embodiments that they relied on included design features that do not exist in the copyrighted figures, including the yellow head and the two dots and small line for the face. And so that's one aspect of how the court relied on subject matter that was not, in its comparison, looked at heads of Lego figures that were the same color as the Zuru figures and had more similar faces, but those faces and that color are not part of the copyright, the copyrighted work. And the broader point, again, is that the district court failed to actually limit its analysis to what's the proper scope of the copyright, because one, again, it did what it called a total concept and feel.
Doesn't that depend on how closely you're focusing on color, faces, and the rest?
Well, and all the parts,
your
right?
Analysis?
Correct.
Sure.
Because the total concept and feel. Even
if the district court should have said in his opinion, for purposes of doing this comparison, I have the copyright here in my left hand, and I have the accused articles in the right hand, mm-hmm. and I'm looking at those instead of looking at article to article, you have to show that error was harmful.
Well, no, I think we have
to show that the error is harmful. Yeah. You're arguing that he should have focused more carefully on the detail.
Well, not just the details, but the actual protected elements of the work. Because what the district court did was it and it says it did a total concept and feel analysis. But the problem with the total concept and feel analysis here is the total concept and feel of these figures is a small 2-inch, 1.5-inch, 2-inch humanoid type shape. And as the
and
second thing,
stepping on one in your bare feet.
Was that stepping on one in bare feet? Yes.
That adds to the fun.
That adds to the fun. And the Second Circuit in that Mattel case addressed this, a very similar situation: 5.5-inch figures with very same human form, very same human pose, so same size, form, and pose, and held that that the only copyrightable part, or the only part subject to the protection of the copyright, was the muscular design of the muscularity in those figures, because the rest of it is just an idea, a human body form, a general human body form of a small size. And so size, first, the size is not something that's part of that's protected by copyright. And then, of course, the general human form isn't protected by copyright. And then the functional aspects aren't protected by copyright. And the district court didn't go through and delineate those aspects. Instead, again, it referred to its total concept and feel. And when you come back to what's actually just protected by the copyright, there's very little similarity. The differences far outweigh the similarities.
Can I ask you one more question before you're into your rebuttal?
Sure.
Already, but the district court enjoined the figures on both the copyright and the trademark. And
yes.
I think you argue that the trademark was improperly based upon a presumption, which is probably not good anymore after eBay.
Right, the irreparable harm aspect, yes.
Does that matter if we affirm on the copyright issue? If we conclude that the preliminary injunction was properly given based upon
the copyright
issue, then does the trademark issue matter?
Is the trademark issue rather for the presumption? I mean, they're separate.
No, on the legal issue. I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, assume we agree with you that the legal analysis on the trademark is wrong,
right,
and that can't support an injunction.
Mm-hmm.
Does that do anything to the effect of the injunction because it's also based upon the copyright infringement?
I mean, it enjoined the products based on both, but I mean, if you still have the one, I mean, and it's if the district court's finding the other, I don't think it ultimately does. Right. But of course,
the district court had written in the opinion, I'm entering a preliminary injunction solely because of a violation of both copyright, patent, and trademark, and link them all up, then you'd have an argument. But absent that argument, it would seem that the copyright violation would support the injunction even if the trademark fell apart.
If there was a copyright violation, and again...
That's a hypothetical.
No, sure. I think it's important to come back to what is the protectable scope.
We have to figure out how mm-hmm. we're going to
sure.
write the opinion mm-hmm. even if we disagree with the district court in some respects.
Sure. No, I understand. Mm-hmm. Could I walk through the copyrighted features, or is that something that you're, I mean, what?
It's your
time. Yeah.
Right. Into your
so, the, oh, I am, okay, well, I'll just go through because the copyright features, the design features that are actually subject to copyright are the distinctive trapezoidal torso, the thick stubby rectangular legs with the bulge in the front, the gap from the top of the torso to the arms, the bright yellow head with the face, the two-dot face, and the very short but wide neck, and none of these things are found in the Zuru products. In fact, the Zuru action figures, the only similarities are the square shape at the bottom of the feet, but even those feet are different thickness, different width. They stub, the feet come out farther from in the Lego product from the legs than they do from the Zuru product. And they both have similar cylindrical shape. The rest of the head is different. The proportion of the head is outsized in the Zuru figure to the rest of the body. The head of the Lego figure is smaller proportionally to the rest of the body. And of course, then there's a yellow, the yellow nature of the head, and then the smiley face that does not exist on the Zuru figure. So ultimately...
And what's the standard of review? Clear error?
Well, on that part, in our view, it's a legal issue here because the court did not delineate what was protected by copyright and what wasn't. And it just looked at a total concept and feel analysis of the entire figure. And so it did not do a proper legal analysis because it never looked at what was protected.
Perhaps we view that as an error, but your burden is to show that there wasn't, that the error was harmful.
That right, and if it didn't...
If we look mm-hmm. at the copyright on the one hand and the figurines on the other, and agree mm-hmm. with the district court judge, then your error was harmless.
Well, but I mean, if you're only focusing on the copyrighted features, there the differences far outweigh.
Well, that's then mm-hmm. taking the blur your eyes standard, which seems odd. But I mean, the notion, especially when children are concerned, you're supposed to pay less attention to detail and more attention to sort of general.
Well, the evidence in the record suggested that was undisputed that everyone thought that the children would actually look more at the differences. And Lego's entire basis of irreparable harm was on the idea that a child may have a bad.
Right, but the legal standard as announced in the case law of the Second Circuit doesn't depend on the child. As the ordinary purchaser.
No, but the
it probably should be in the case of these things, but it's not.
But the irreparable harm analysis was linked to the idea that the child was confused by the source, that it was a Lego product when it had a bad experience. But here, the child would see the differences because they're fundamentally different things.
You're well over, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'm going to give you 2 minutes. You've got to be able to have your time.
May it please the court, I'm Beth Alquist with Dave Pitney representing the Appellees, the Lego Group. I want to start with Judge Hughes's question about irreparable harm that concerned you with respect to the Make-A-Tape product. The Make-A-Tape product itself wasn't accused of infringement. It was selling, Zuru was selling that product using infringing images on the product. And so the irreparable harm that caused that product to be removed was because of the figurines that it was displaying on it. The court also held.
What's the harm other than the fact that it's infringing?
Is there
no claim that the product was faulty, that the legs would fall off or something like that, right? As we're talking now about the packaging.
The problem is that the image that they see, the minifigure figurine or the friend's figurine, is then associated with our product, and in fact, physical specimens were before the court for all of these products, and the court
That will happen in any case, any instance of infringement of the copyright.
That is true.
Right. And that wouldn't ordinarily be enough for irreparable harm. That just is infringement. Your reputational argument, your, oh my God, everybody will think that Lego is crummy. The only evidence I saw that supported that was that in one instance the legs fell off, and so there was somebody said, "Oh, it's great, yeah, but the product was faulty." And giving you the benefit of that argument for showing that there would be harm to reputation and all the rest, that doesn't carry over to the tape product in my mind.
And I think there's evidence in the record that it did carry over to the tape product.
Where?
The physical specimens of the tape product.
Where shows that there's something, the image breaks down, or that how is Lego's name disparaged by the image that's on the tape package?
The image is substantially similar to our genuine product.
Yeah, but
how
that's
about a site?
Infringement. Let's give us we're looking for something because let's assume. That, I mean, in my judgment, if we took away the leg fell off on the figures, you wouldn't be able to show irreparable harm on that ground.
In addition to the legs falling off problem, there was clutch power problem. So,
Which? So
clutch power. Clutch power is what the witnesses explained in the Lego system as how the knobs
sticks together.
Okay, fine. And that's
not on the label. That's the tape product doesn't have any stick problem.
Well, it actually does.
Where's the evidence on that?
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Right.
I mean, all I see is this figure infringes our patents and doesn't link up the actual product that was enjoined with irreparable harm.
And so in this case, it was all of it, right? So it's
the
clutch power.
I mean, can you be specific?
Yes.
Where is specific evidence that the infringing image on the tape product somehow has irreparable harm based on the tape product, not on all this other stuff?
Record site.
I don't have a record site for a specific tape product, but in the whole, the court found irreparable harm because of so many different
products. I mean, these are different products. He can enjoin the other stuff because he found that there's quality issues, there's market share issues, there's loss of profits. None of those, there's no evidence supporting that with regard to the tape product. You don't even make the tape product, so you can't have loss of profit or market share issues with regard to the tape product. The only thing I could potentially see is them associating the tape product with you and therefore having quality products. But I didn't see any evidence that the tape product was inferior.
There is no evidence in the record specifically that the tape product is inferior. So, you're right.
So what is the evidence for irreparable harm on the tape product?
It is associating our trademark and our copyrights with a different.
You're saying
different
it's causing the consumer to purchase the otherwise inferior product.
Yes, Your Honor. Exactly.
But the product is not inferior.
The physical specimen in the record that the court indicated he looked at shows that it's inferior. It's not inferior to a Lego product because we don't sell it, but it is not a quality product.
But you say that, but you don't have any evidence.
Yeah. The only evidence is the actual physical specimen, and
the court said it was.
Okay, so what about the irreparable harm on the box?
I'm sorry.
Give me a record cite to the irreparable harm on the blocks.
So with respect to there's
patent infringement
on the patent infringement.
Yes.
So there are two instances that the court found for irreparable harm on the blocks. One was that it would become a compulsory license. The court said in his ruling that allowing these bricks to be sold turns into a compulsory license if we allow it. And David Buxbaum testified below that the Lego Group does not and has never licensed any of its patents or copyrights or trademarks to competitor manufacturers.
If you don't enjoin, it's a compulsory license. What does that mean?
They would be allowed to sell it if it's not enjoined. And we don't license any other manufacturer to do that.
But that happens all the time in regular patent cases where, you know, there's not enough to give an injunction, and so there's damages or some kind of license. That's not support itself for the injunction. You have to give other support for the injunction.
And the other support for the injunction
that's
with
circular.
With respect to the bricks, the other is again, it was the clutch power. Exhibit 1 in evidence the witnesses had and talked about the lack of clutch power so that it was an inferior product.
Was there a market share? Is there any market share or potential loss of market share directly attributable to these few bricks?
So to the few bricks specifically, no. There was no record evidence of that.
So can you cite us the record, specific records on the clutch power insofar as the blocks are concerned, as opposed to the figurine the legs on the image wouldn't fit? So you've got the record. Give me a cite for the clutch power as to just the blocks.
That was.
I understand the clutch power as part of the problem with the legs falling off, because that's part of the reason why the legs fell off on the figures, because they weren't tight enough stuck together. So the clutch power of the blocks a different matter.
That was Liz Knight's testimony. She was Lego
Where is that?
Expert.
Where?
And I believe it is in the appendix. Sorry, Your Honors, I don't have the site off the top of my head. It is her testimony in the appendix. And it is also the court's physical inspection of Exhibit 1, where you could feel the difference between the products and the clutch power, which the court relied upon as well.
Okay, so what's your response to the argument that the district court flubbed it here because instead of comparing a text of a copyright to an accused article, they compared an article to an embodiment?
So in this case, the copyright is the 3D sculpture itself. The court did receive evidence.
The copyright is words on a page, right?
The copyright, in this instance.
An image.
In this instance, it is all you can give to the Copyright Office are photographs of the sculpture. But what is protected is the shape. What is protected is the sculpture itself. And the evidence in this case is that, first, the court did look at the deposit materials, which are the pictures, but also the court had exemplars. And David Buxbaum testified at appendix page 505 that the exemplars were representative samples of what was in the deposit materials. And in fact, Zuru's briefs called them representative samples of what was in the deposit materials. And it is that shape and that form that is protected. It is not a 2D image, it's a 3D image. And so, of course, the court, in deciding a 3D sculpture, should look at both of them. And in fact, courts regularly do that. Visual comparisons are of actual products in most of the cases, and definitely the toy cases cited by both parties in the Second Circuit in this case.
Would you agree with me that Rule 65C requires a bond to be posted in an amount sufficient to compensate a party in the event that it was wrongfully enjoined?
Yes, Your Honor.
How do we arrive at $25,000?
Is that so? To answer, I believe, again, it was Judge Hughes's question to the other side, Zuru never suggested an amount of a bond at all. In appeal, it refers only to a declaration below that the court questioned the witness about during the preliminary injunction hearing. And the court found that testimony to not be credible, that the $8 to $10 million losses
would occur. How do we know that the judge found that to be not credible?
In that, he questioned it and then didn't
credit
it. Where
do we have that colloquy in the record?
That is at the appendix 1286 through 1288.
1286 through?
1288.
Did you suggest the $25,000 number?
No, Your Honor.
So the district court just came up with this on its own?
Yes, Your Honor. And based in part on the overwhelming evidence of the likelihood of success on the merits, and specifically on many different types of intellectual property. So this court found so much wrong, and courts in the Second Circuit do have no bonds when there's overwhelming evidence of likelihood of success on the merits, which is what happened in this case.
I'm looking. I don't see it.
1286, I'm looking for.
Oh, it's 1290.
Oh.
Okay.
In our version, it's
1286. Okay.
So the standard is not what they could get in damages if they won, you know, in its entirety. Like if they win, you know, and they can show that they would have been out $1 million, it's a sliding scale that balances the possibility of relief with the amount of relief.
That's exactly.
So if they have a 1% chance of winning a $1 million, they shouldn't get a $1 million bond.
That is correct.
Is that the Second Circuit law?
The Second Circuit.
Can you cite me a case for that?
The Second Circuit law, more specifically, is that if there's such overwhelming evidence, you can find no bond. There's broad discretion in this case. And there are cases that I can cite for that that are actually not in the briefs. But there's two Second Circuit two cases within the Second Circuit, I should say. One is Lighting and Supplies versus Sunlight, which is an Eastern District of New York case. The other is New York City Triathlon LLC versus New York City Triathlon Club, obviously a trademark case, also in the Southern District of New York in 2010. And both of those cases found that it's such an overwhelming likelihood of success that no bond is necessary. And the court was well within its discretion, in the absence of any evidence from Zuru about what the bond should be, to set what it deemed to be an appropriate bond in this case.
Can I just make sure your answer on the other question I asked your friend, if we agree with the district court on the injunction based on the copyright for the figures, but disagree with the trademark analysis, does that alter in any way the scope of the injunction or whether it should be affirmed?
It does not. The scope of the injunction would be the same. Your Honors, I'd like to.
But if we found that there was insufficient evidence for irreparable harm on the tape product and or the box, then we would send it back, and that piece of the preliminary injunction have to be carved out, right?
That's true, Your Honor. With respect to the box, it is the same. So the box, to be specific, was both patent infringement because the bricks were in there. They also used the infringing images on their product. And so certainly the evidence, the overwhelming evidence of likelihood of success on the merits in trademark and in copyright, the irreparable harm can be caused there because the same low quality of play could certainly be infused into the images that are on the box and, for that matter, onto the tape. It could be the same issue. Your Honors, I will address what we called the heart of the case before, the comparison of the idea, as opposing counsel points out, and the expression of the idea. In this case, they are saying that there's only one idea, and it's a small humanoid figurine. There are actually two before this court, both made by Lego, that demonstrate the difference between the overall look and feel of the figurines. On page 5 of our brief that we've been talking about, the minifigure figurine, there's an image that appears there. And on page 8 of our brief, the red brief, the Friends figurine appears there. Both of those are different expressions of this same idea opposing counsel refers to. They're very different. They're protected by different copyrights, and they have a different overall look and feel. Zuru didn't go out and create its own humanoid figurine that's small, that can work with these products. It copied the minifigure figurine. And so for them to argue here that somehow it's only an idea and they're allowed to do what they've done, I think the comparison of the Friends and the minifigure figurine demonstrates for the court that there can be very different expressions, a whole range of different expressions. But what Zuru did here was copy ours, and that's what's inappropriate. I see my time is about up. Unless there are further questions, we ask that the court affirm the district court's ruling in all respects.
Thank you, counsel. You have 2 minutes.
Okay. So again, with respect to copyright, again, the issue is what, it's not just the fact that there's an idea at issue, it's what is protectable and what's not. The size of the figure is not protectable. And in fact, Lego cited a case in the same district court that it has against another party, 2019 Westlaw 3387330, which incorporates an earlier finding from the same district court, 874 F sub 2nd at 95102, specifically referring to the fact that the size of the figure is not protected. And then, so what we're left with are the design features of that figure, which are the trapezoidal shape, the bulge with the legs, the yellow head, and the small two dots for the eyes and the mouth, the small line for the mouth. And that does not appear in any of the Zero action figures. The other thing is with respect to the harm and the supposed quality issue, I mean, at Appendix 361, where the review about the body coming apart, the person says, "Oh, awesome set, my boys love them." All of the reviews were positive. There was not one review that was negative and said that they did not like the product. So the evidence shows that the actual users of the product very much enjoyed them. With respect to the trademark issue, I do. Oh, actually, with respect to the
clutch power on the box, on the box,
on the blocks or the figures, because I mean the figures are made differently to actually move. Right, that's another feature that's different from the Zuru.
Your adversary is suggesting that there was evidence in the record that the blocks themselves, as manufactured by your client, had clutch problems.
I think
that the Lego product doesn't have clutch problems, and therefore there's a disparagement of Lego's reputation by the sale of a clutchless product.
Right. My recollection of that testimony is that it was in connection with the figures, and that how they come apart and stick together and stay together. That's the clutch power. But the Zuru figures are different than the Lego figures, because the Lego figures are meant the legs aren't meant to turn around or move like the Zuru figures are meant to do. So that issue is related to the fact that the Zuru figures have a function, moving their legs all the way around, rotating from the entire body. And based on the issues that we've described about the court failing to define the proper scope of the copyright and the trademark before doing its analysis, we believe that preliminary injunction should be reversed because it was an abuse of discretion, and also for the issues with the irreparable harm we discussed. Thank you.
Matter will stand submitted. Thank you, counsel.